Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, January 20th. MISD Board votes to move YWLA. Displaced STEM students will receive priority in other academic programs. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. A closing case from board member Rick Davis proved influential as the Midland ISD board voted to move the All-Girls Young Women's Leadership Academy into the building currently home to Washington STEM. Davis, an attorney by trade, rattled off reasons, including that costs, the academic performance of Washington STEM, and that Washington STEM students would be in a better situation in just about any cases compared to their current situation at the campus in Southeast Midland. In the end, Board President Brian Murray credited Davis's comments for his decision to change his mind and vote for the YWLA change. His vote was the critical fourth vote needed, joining Katie Joyner, Davis, and Robert Marquez, who Murray also credited with an effective closing case. The board's decision ends a divisive issue in Midland. Washington STEM is located in Southeast Midland, but over the past 5 years, the school has been plagued by academic performance issues which impacted demand. The school was operating at 49% capacity, and according to Davis, that included less than 20% attendance from those who lived close to the Southeast Midland campus. The board's decision will also save the district between $7 million and $8 million in costs to bring in more custom portables for the all-girls in-district charter school operated by Young Women's Preparatory Network out of Dallas. When completed, the school will be home to girls in grades 6 through 12. This process showed that YWLA has fallen behind when it comes to meeting the needs of minority and economically disadvantaged students. Officials expect that will change. Davis said during his closing statement that the move in the heart of a minority part of Midland will help correct those numbers. The students of Washington STEM will be displaced because of the move. District officials said there will be spots prioritized for former Washington STEM students at YWLA, Pease Communication and Technology Academy, STEM programs at schools in South and Northwest Midland, and San Jacinto Junior High, which implements an AVID, Advancement Via Individual Determination program, for its students in 6th through 8th grade. After a lengthy discussion, Tommy Bishop made a motion to keep YWLA in Southeast Midland. He referenced the fact that keeping YWLA near Jones Elementary was the result of a district that didn't have a plan B for the all-girls school after the defeat of the 2019 school bond. Board members voted that motion down 4-3 before deciding on moving YWLA across town. Based on the conversations Tuesday night, expect fallout from the board's decision, including a firming up of long-range facility plans for the district. Several comments were made from the community and board that overcrowding is an issue in some Midland elementary schools. Davis identified Northeast Midland as needing an elementary school to serve the growing population in the State Highway 349 corridor. Marquez also mentioned there's no elementary school south of Interstate 20. Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, when asked for guidance on the YWLA issue, took the opportunity to say that the YWLA situation is an example of the lack of coherence and systems that existed in the district prior to her arrival nearly 1 year ago. Quote, "We are working to change that," Ramsey said. Man, age 19, admits to Midland murder. Midland Police Department says suspect said he stabbed victim after using drugs. The story was written by Mercedes Cordero. Jose Porras, age 19, was arrested Tuesday and charged with the murder of 23-year-old Alex Sierra, according to court documents. At approximately 4:40 p.m. Tuesday, the Midland Police Department and Midland Fire Department EMS responded to the Cluster's apartment located at 4415 Northcrest Drive after a dead body was found in the Northwest Midland apartment complex. While at the scene, officers observed a man, later identified as Porras, standing nearby. Officers noticed possible bloodstains on his sneakers and paint-covered jeans, according to his arrest affidavit. When officers asked Porras if he had any weapons on him, he stated he had a knife. Upon further inspection, the paring knife had dark red residue where the grip ended and the blade began, according to his arrest affidavit. During his interview, Porras stated he had been using methamphetamines and confronted Sierra because he did not trust him, according to his arrest affidavit. Porras admitted to MPD detectives that he initially tried to choke Sierra, but when the victim attempted to defend himself, Porras stabbed Sierra multiple times with the knife MPD took into evidence. Porras also admitted that he moved Sierra's body from the apartment to the sidewalk. Porras on Wednesday was being held at the Midland County Detention Center on $500,000 bond for the first-degree felony. Regulators say heat will stay on during cold snap. Railroad Commission says facility inspections show better preparation. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A cold snap bearing down on Texas has state officials working to reassure Texans the heat will stay on. After the events of Winter Storm Uri last February, concerns were raised at the end of December about a drop in natural gas output amid a cold snap. The Railroad Commission and Texas Oil and Gas Association pointed out that natural gas supplies fluctuate regularly and there were sufficient supplies flowing to power plants as well as supplies in storage. With a new round of cold weather coming, the Commission said Wednesday, on-site visits by its inspectors show significant progress has been made at natural gas facilities to ensure fuel will be supplied during emergency weather conditions. Since the end of last summer, Railroad Commission inspectors have visited not only natural gas wells, but storage and pipelines. That includes visits to more than 3,800 natural gas facilities, representing oil and gas leased with nearly 22,000 active wells, gas storage facilities that account for over 76% of the state's gas storage, and more than 350 pipelines that transport natural gas. About 98% of facilities visited have been winterized, and the remaining 2% were in the process of winterizing when inspectors visited. The Permian Basin Petroleum Association has also joined the effort, alerting members of the approaching winter weather and passing along briefs from the Texas Division of Emergency Management detailing weather forecasts. The PBPA has also alerted members to new regulatory requirements that they designate essential infrastructure, including workshops held in Midland about the new essential infrastructure forms to be submitted. The Railroad Commission pointed out, quote, "It's very important to understand that daily gas production can fluctuate from hour to hour due to a variety of reasons, such as scheduled maintenance and scheduled downtime for safety reasons. Average statewide daily production can vary as much as more than 2 billion cubic feet per day, even during late spring. Given Texas's production totals, this means more than 90% of the daily production stays online," end quote. The Commission's briefing added that daily natural gas production is just one piece of the puzzle in terms of natural gas supply. The vast majority of the state's natural gas supply is stored in underground facilities and packed in major pipelines. As of mid-December, the state had approximately 448 billion cubic feet of working gas in underground storage, and another 30 to 35 billion cubic feet is typically in pipelines at any given time. Site visits are expected to continue throughout the winter, with inspectors directly observing measures operators are taking to provide natural gas supplies under normal and emergency conditions, including what devices natural gas facilities have put in place and processes to harden assets against cold weather. Quote, "We have been putting boots on the ground and eyes on the state's critical assets," Ted Wooten, Railroad Commission Director of Critical Infrastructure, said in a statement. Continuing the quote, "Based on what our inspectors have observed, natural gas producers and pipeline operators have taken necessary actions to ensure gas will continue to flow this winter to people's homes and power plants," end quote. Preliminary data for October 2021 shows the statewide average natural gas production at about 26.5 billion cubic feet per day, which was up by more than 1.5 billion cubic feet per day in October of 2020. And Texas continues to add more production capacity. Since the start of the fourth quarter of last year, operators in the Permian Basin have added more than 30 drilling rigs to the basin, bringing the total to nearly 300 as of January, with the state at more than 400. From August to December, well completions averaged more than 400 per month, the highest since first quarter 2020, based on data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration.
Hello, this is Michael, reading a local article from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, January 20th, 2022. Report states weekly COVID cases in Midland County exceed 3,000, by Stuart Doreen. For the second straight week, the Midland Health Department reported a record for new COVID cases in a week during the pandemic. The Health Department showed 3,124 new COVID cases inside Midland County from January 9th through the 15th. That was a 7.3% increase compared to the previous week when the number of weekly cases first topped 2,000 during the pandemic. Highlights of the week included 2 days when the number of cases topped 500 to 588 on January 11th and 567 on January 13th. Midland Health also showed a 50.7% positivity rate last week. It was the second straight week that the positivity rate topped 50% at Midland Health testing centers. Midland Health officials did catch a break Wednesday as it was reported that the number of COVID inpatients inside Midland Memorial Hospital dipped back below 100. The 95 inpatients Wednesday morning was down from 103 on Tuesday. Midland Memorial did report that 240 of 270 available rooms, 88.8%, were filled.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 20th, 2022. Community calendar. Dinosaur exhibit in library. Midland County is opening a dinosaur exhibit at the Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch this Saturday. The free exhibit is intended for ages 5 and up. Library staff will host a dinosaur-themed day during the MISD Intercession Week beginning February 7th. The day will feature activities to challenge student creativity and problem-solving skills that relate to dinosaurs and fossils. Registration is required. All inquiries for registration can be made by calling the Centennial Library at 432-742-7400. Out of many, one. Portraits of America's Immigrants. This Saturday, join the Museum of the Southwest for a preview of the new exhibition, Out of Many, One, Portraits of America's Immigrants by President George W. Bush. Tickets are $50 each. Cocktails and hors d'oeuvres provided. Attire will be cocktails. Visit https://www.museumsw.org/events for more information. Two Midlanders, Bob Fu and Javed Anwar, were featured in the book. Midland Arts Association Exhibition. The Midland Arts Association, MAA, will collaborate with the Museum of the Southwest to host this year's Spring Juried Art Exhibition. The show is open to residents of Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. Submissions and payment deadline is midnight, March 14th. The show will be up from April 29th to June 19th. Prizes include $1,000 for Best of Show, $700 for first place, $500 for second place, and $250 for third place. Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition. Submissions open April 1st for the 64th Annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition, hosted by the Ellen Knoll Art Museum in partnership with the Odessa Arts Associations. The exhibition aims to highlight the talent of artists in and around the West Texas region. For 2022's exhibit, artists are encouraged to explore the theme From Nature, according to the museum's website. Awards available include $450 for Best of Show, juror selected, with the winner also receiving a solo show as part of the 65th Annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition, curated by ENAM curator Daniel Zies. The second place award will win $350. The third place award will win $250. Three honorable mention winners will receive $50, and three college student awards will receive $100. The People's Choice Award winners for the first, $100, second, $75, and third, $50, will be voted on by the public and awarded at the end of the exhibit. Submissions and payment deadlines will be 5 p.m. April 18th. Event schedule. Valentine Hart Make and Take class, 10:30 a.m. to noon Thursday at Miss Casey's. Third Thursday reading program, 4:30 p.m. Thursday at the George W. Bush Childhood Home. Morning Mama Coffee and Tea, 9:30 a.m. Friday at Anthus. O'Reilly Extreme Arena Cross Nationals, 7 p.m. Friday at the Ector County Coliseum. Gerardo Ortiz, La Fiera de Ojinaga, Los Vendalavales de y Los Anchondo, 8 p.m. Friday at La Hacienda Event Center. Paw Patrol Meet and Greet Friday through Sunday at Polly's Restaurant in the MCM Grande Fun Dome. Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Museum of the Southwest. Opening preview celebration for Out of Many, One, Portraits of America's Immigrants, 6 to 8 p.m. Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Ruin Your Resolution Party, 6 p.m. Saturday at Tall City Brewing Company. Dinosaur Revolution, the exhibit, 10 a.m. Saturday at the Centennial Library. Understanding Poverty Training, 6:30 p.m. January 24th at 502 East Nobles. NRHA candidate meet and greet, 6:30 p.m. January 24th at the Bush Convention Center. For tickets, www.eventbrite.com/e/240-688-524-857. NRHA Meet the Candidates Day 2, 11:30 a.m. January 25th at the Bush Convention Center. 2022 State of Oil and Gas, 11 a.m. January 26th at the Horseshoe. Tom Segura, I'm Coming Everywhere, 7 p.m. January 26th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Generations Luncheon, 11 a.m. January 27th at the First Baptist Church of Midland. Wagner Knoll 10-Year Mini Birthday Party, 4 p.m. January 27th at Bird Box Gifts. LWV Candidates Forum, 5:30 p.m. January 27th at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium at Midland College. Wild for Wildlife Family Science Night, 6:30 p.m. January 27th at the Petroleum Museum. Motown Experience, 6 to 9 p.m. January 27th and 28th at 3211 West Wadley. 7th Annual Permian Basin Mental Health Conference, 8 a.m. January 28th at Midland ISD. Playdate, 9 to 11 a.m. January 28th at Museum of the Southwest. Tween Video Games, 4:30 p.m. January 28th at Centennial Library. Chocolate Decadence, 6 to 10 p.m. January 28th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Cody Jinx, 7 p.m. January 28th at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Orientation for LETMN 2022 class, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. January 29th at the Sibley Nature Center. Create a Bowl with Mike Richardson, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. January 29th at the Arts Council of Midland. West Texas Wedding Expo, noon January 30th at the Horseshoe Arena.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 20th. Arliss Doyle Maddox, age 89, of Midland, passed away on Monday, January 17th. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 22nd, at Tucumcari Memorial Park in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Arliss Doyle Maddox was born on April 20th, 1932, in Mangum, Oklahoma, to Burt Jackson Maddox and Lena Mae McNeely Maddox. He is survived by his daughters, Rogene Culver and husband Paul of Midland, Maxine Davis and husband Sam of Midland, Darlene Tate and husband Robert of Seguin, Texas, sister Lanelle Evitz and her husband Dr. George Evitz of Tucumcari, New Mexico, also several granddaughters and great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, Bert and Lena Mae Maddox, brothers Don Maddox and Bill Maddox, grandson Caleb Tate, and wife Yvonne. Local arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Beulah Fern Ellis, age 90, of Midland, passed away on January 16th. Beulah was born September 19, 1931, in Colorado City, Texas, to James and Beulah Coker on her mother's birthday. Fern is preceded in death by her husband, Melvin Edwin Pete Ellis, son, John Ellis, sister, Patsy Marie Donnell, brother, Roger Coker, and parents, James and Beulah Coker. Fern is survived by her son, Matt Ellis, and his wife, Leanna Ellis, daughter-in-law, Anna Ellis, two granddaughters, and several great-grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held at Ellis Funeral Home at 801 Andrews Highway in Midland at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 22nd. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Hospice of Midland at 911 West Texas in Midland. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Ellis family. Mary Margaret Bowie Atwater, age 71, passed away on January 15th. She was born on October 9, 1950, in Conroe, Texas, to Edwin R. and Imogene Bowie. Her family moved to Midland in 1957. She attended San Jacinto Junior High School and graduated from Lee High School in 1969. She met the love of her life in high school, and she and Jim Atwater have been married for more than 50 years. She is survived by her husband, Jim Atwater, sons Lee Atwater, Chad Atwater, sister Donna Cox, sisters-in-law Connie Foote, Bonnie Atwater, brothers Phil Petty, Mike Petty, Bob Petty, and numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, January 21st, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. The funeral will be on Saturday, January 22nd at 2 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be at Rest Haven Cemetery. Glenn Pipes, pastor of Wilshire Park Baptist Church, will officiate. The family suggests donations be made to Hospice of Midland and Wilshire Park Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Patsy Lee Busey passed away on Saturday morning, January 15th. She was 91 years old. Pat was born on July 7, 1930, as the only child of Clint Samuel Keith and Bertha Krupe Keith. She was born in Enid, Oklahoma, but her parents moved to Texas while Pat was still in school. There will be no service at this time. However, a memorial celebration will take place later. Arrangements are by Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, January 20th, 2022. Colder temperatures to move across the Permian Basin. The warm temperatures from this week are being replaced by low freezing temperatures as a cold front intrudes upon the region. Today's temperature will feature a high of 36 degrees with a low of 23. Friday's low is expected to be even colder at 19 with a high of 52. The low temperatures may last for the remainder of the week and continue into next week, where a high in the 60s won't be reached until possibly next Friday. However, as far as snow and ice accumulations go, people in the Odessa Midland area should not worry. We're going to have another Arctic air outbreak, meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Midland, Matthew Johnson, said. We're going to have a cold front bringing in cooler temperatures from the Arctic, and that possibly could produce some snow-like showers in the Davis Mountains. But here in the Midland-Odessa area, we're not expecting much. Even if there isn't any precipitation in the Permian Basin, Johnson said the ground temperature in the area will be too warm for anything to stick. We're looking like we're going to be dry, Johnson said. Temperature-wise, possibly Thursday afternoon, we'll barely be breaking freezing. But after that, our high temperatures should gradually warm up until the weekend, when we get cold air again. Temperatures should be frigid, as they will be Thursday afternoon. As for low temperatures, we're looking at the upper teens Wednesday night and Thursday as well. Thursday night, it should be in the teens as well. The low temperatures should slowly move into the mid-20s by the weekend and hopefully above freezing next week. It looks like low temperatures will be below freezing for the rest of this week. If there is an area in the Permian Basin that might see any precipitation, it's likely in the southern parts of the region in the Davis Mountains. However, just like with Odessa and Midland, the ground temperatures in the Davis Mountains are still too warm for much to stick around. They can expect light accumulations, Johnson said of the Davis Mountains. The ground temperatures are still pretty warm out there, so it's going to be hard for anything to stick. It should still be cold enough for them to see a range of rain-snow mix and accumulation-wise, a tenth of an inch to a few hundredths, so it's looking like it'll be pretty dry. Fortunately, our dew points are pretty low. They're slightly increasing as the front moves in, but they should be pretty dry. Wednesday's high in Odessa was around 63 degrees. Monday and Tuesday of this week saw similar warm temperatures prior to the cold front. ECISD musicians among the elite. 10 Ector County ISD students have earned the distinction of all-state musicians. Executive Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said there are 5 from Permian and 5 from Odessa High School. That breaks down with 4 with the Permian Band, 1 with the Permian Choir, 3 from the OHS Choir, and 2 from the OHS Band. We're very glad that both schools are represented in both the choirs and the bands, Hawley said. This is the single greatest honor in Texas for a student musician because they have been working since May, with many of them on this music to prepare for these auditions, he added. It's roughly the top 2% of those that audition that make it. It's a very distinct honor for the students, Hawley said. This year, the students also get to go to the Texas Music Educators Association meeting in San Antonio, which they couldn't last year due to COVID. Aiden Caballero, a senior at Permian, is a percussionist. This is the second year running he made All-State. It's just different this year because last year we didn't have a concert. We never got this far. When we got the results last year, I was excited, but that was it. They just said that I made it, and we couldn't do anything else, Caballero said. But this year, I'm glad we got to do a chair test. We're assigned an ensemble now, so that's really exciting. I can't wait for the concert, he said. The TMEA convention is February 9th through 12th in San Antonio. Getting to this point was difficult because he had to go through 3 auditions. The first audition, I got 3rd, which is surprising. I did not do too well. The second audition, I did a lot better. I got 1st, and then the last audition, I got 2nd. Which let me go to state, Caballero said. He was scared he wasn't going to make it because he knows people who have made it 1 year but not the next. I really wanted to make it twice in a row, Caballero said. He hopes to go to West Texas A&M University and study music performance. Nydia Brito, a senior at Permian, is a flutist who made All-State for the first time. I'm so excited. This has been something that I've worked for since freshman year, and so to finally be able to make it is super exciting, Brito said. After all the work she put in, she said she wasn't that surprised to get the honor. She thought she might get 2nd or 3rd, so finding out that she made it, Brito was gratified. Because it's her senior year, it makes the achievement very special. Because it was like senior year last year to finally make it to state. Brito plans to attend Texas A&M University and study agricultural landscaping. She wants to keep playing the flute. It's just been such a big part of my life, so I want to keep playing throughout the years, Brito said. She added that she has been playing the instrument since 6th grade. Sean Price, a sophomore at Permian, made All-State for the 2nd time. He plays the French horn. Price, who is in his 5th year of playing French horn, said he feels relieved to have made it this year. He said there wasn't any pressure from other people, but his mother made All-State all 4 years of high school. She motivates me, definitely, but she doesn't put pressure on me. But I feel like it's there. Grace Sanchez, a junior at PHS, plays clarinet. This is the first time she has made All-State. It's really a unique feeling. It's very hard to describe, but it feels very validating, almost, Sanchez said. She said her band director told her getting into Harvard is easier than making All-State. Sanchez isn't sure where she'll be going to college, but she's considering studying either music or marine biology. Trent Avery, a Permian senior, is a vocalist, and like Sanchez, is in the first year he has made All-State. "It's very exciting," Avery said. "I feel very accomplished because this is something that I've been waiting for since I was in, like, seventh grade. I always saw other seniors that I looked up to making All-State, and it just feels very validating." He said the most difficult part is staying motivated, especially when you're going against such great people. After the first round, you have to start teaching the music to yourself. So some days it's like, do we really want to do this? But sticking through it is really what helps. And then someone sounds the same, so you have to make sure that you stick out, Avery said. He plans to attend Texas State University and major in sound recording technology. Paige Byford, a junior vocalist at Odessa High, was an All-Stater last year. Earning the recognition this year was super exciting, and she's looking forward to attending TMEA this year. "I feel like I've worked really, really hard, and I'm just really glad that I get the reward," Byford said. She added that she wasn't surprised she made it. "I really just put in, like, all the work that I could, and I was really satisfied with my performance. And I felt that if my performance wasn't good enough to make it, then that wasn't on me. I had done everything I could," Byford said. Asked if she was going to try for All-State next year, she said she was leaning toward no. "I've made it twice. I'm going to get to go to TMEA. I have done it, and next year I want to focus on my commitment to sports because that's what I want to go to college for," Byford said. Byford is in varsity volleyball, basketball, and track. She has been singing for as long as she can remember. "My family has grown up singing. I've grown up singing on the stage at church. It's just a really huge passion of mine," Byford said. Byford, who attends Grace Christian Fellowship, said she wants to keep singing. "I think church is definitely the outlet for my singing, because it's just amazing for me to glorify the Lord. This is something that he gave me," Byford added. Ulysses Rodriguez, a bass clarinetist from OHS, has been playing the instrument for about 5 years. He played clarinet previously. Rodriguez said this is his most incredible achievement. "It's really the highlight of my high school career because I've actually never done something this great," he added. This is the first time he has earned All-State honors. He said he has gotten close the past few years. "It makes it a lot more special," Rodriguez added. All-State honorees: Trent Avery, Bass 2, PHS Choir; Nydia Brito, Flute, PHS Band; Paige Byford, Soprano 1, OHS Choir; Aiden Caballero, Percussion, PHS Band; Justice Davis, Tenor, OHS Choir; Caitlin Fitzgerald, Soprano 2, OHS Choir; TJ Hinojos, Percussion, OHS Band; Sean Price, Horn, PHS Band; Ulysses Rodriguez, Bass Clarinet, OHS Band; Grace Sanchez, Clarinet, PHS Band. ERCOT officials tout grid progress. Brad Jones, interim president and CEO of the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, met with local officials Wednesday to explain how millions of Texans lost power in the middle of an unprecedented winter storm last year and what steps have been taken to avoid a repeat. Although a winter storm in 1895 was colder than the storm that hit last February, it didn't last nearly as long, Jones said. In explaining what happened last year, Jones said Texas had a capacity of 84,000 megawatts of energy, and during the week of the storm, the state lost 50,000 megawatts for a variety of reasons. The freezing rain forced solar wind turbines to be shut down, piles of coal basically turned into granite, and the intake water used to cool a nuclear plant in South Texas froze up on the way into the plant, forcing the plant to shut down, Jones said. "We also lost natural gas units, partly because the natural gas supply went away, quite a few of them because something froze, some element froze up that they didn't have protected. It didn't have a heating coil on it, or didn't have a protective building around it, or it didn't have the right layer of insulation, and the elements froze up, and they had to turn them off, Jones said. When ERCOT began to get into trouble, Jones said they asked distributors to begin to shut down power for specific feeders on a rotating basis, expecting customers to be without power for an hour. Eventually, the distributors informed ERCOT they had run out of feeders to turn off because 60% of customers are considered critical and are exempt from being turned off, including hospitals, fire departments, and police departments. As a result of being unable to turn off any more feeders, people went hours and sometimes days without power. And when the power was turned back on, systems ended up crashing because they were overloaded, Jones said. Hundreds of homeowners quickly wanted to bring their house temperatures to 68 degrees from 30 to 40 degrees. Communications was also problematic during the crisis, Jones said. The communications got completely confused. Retail electric providers and distribution providers were all sending a different message, and ERCOT had a different message, and everyone was kind of crossing over each other when trying to talk to the public, and so the public was left in a horrible position, Jones said. If residents had known their power wasn't going to rotate back on, they could have made different decisions, including leaving their homes, he said. Since the storm, Jones said, efforts have been made to weatherize generators to a greater degree than they have been in the past. The legislature was in session when the winter storm happened, and they immediately got on the issue. They gave us some authority we didn't have before, and to the Public Utility Commission that we worked with closely. The Public Utility Commission set rules for how generators must now be weatherized, how they must now prepare for this type of storm. They gave us the authority as ERCOT to go out and inspect these generators, and if they fail, they pay a $1 million fine per day. In addition, Jones said distributors have been tasked with trying to find other customers they can shut off when needed, perhaps those that are located near hospitals and other entities that can't have their power turned off. ERCOT is also working with the state and distributors on improving communications, he said. ERCOT has doubled its communication team and has contracted with a crisis communication team that can bring on 20 to 25 people in another emergency situation. In addition, people from across the industry have gathered during mock situations to talk through issues and coordinate, and they've also been meeting with the state's emergency management department, Jones said. The Texas Department of Transportation is also working on a system that would work like Amber Alerts. As for the future of Texas electricity, Jones said, it's fantastic. We are a state that has abundant winds, abundant solar resources, and the federal government is spending a lot of subsidies for those resources, which means developers want to come to Texas, great business climate, low taxes, low-cost labor, Jones said. They get the money from the feds to come here and locate. What that means for Texas is we get a lower energy price than what we deserve because the feds are paying a good portion of wind and solar to come to our state, and we like that. Of the 124,000 megawatt capacity available during the summers in Texas, Jones said 10,000 megawatts comes from solar, up from 3,000 megawatts last summer. Within 2 years, it'll be up to 20,000. Roughly 60,000 megawatts comes from gas, 35,000 from wind, 10,000 from coal, and 5,000 from nuclear, he said. After the presentation, Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven said he wants citizens to hear from Jones about what happened, also echoing comments made by Midland Mayor Patrick Payton during the presentation. Hoven said he is uneasy the federal government continues to push renewable energy, which he said many view as unreliable. I want to maintain the dominance of coal, natural gas, and nuclear because it is dependable. But the thing is, if you heard the presentation today, you heard the electricity portion. We're going up to 20% on the wind and solar, where we're at about 46% in gas. To get there, you have to take away from one source, and that one source is natural gas, Hoven said. Hovind said voters need to make sure those they elect understand the importance of natural gas, coal, and nuclear. They have to understand that we as West Texans want reliable energy, and we know in West Texas it's gas, coal, and nuclear, and if they aren't in line with that principle, then you need to question them, he said. COVID-19 news, by the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 32,895 total cases, 587 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 135 students, 40 staff. Midland County, 33,096 total cases, 430 deaths. Texas, 5,623,930 total cases, 77,362 deaths. Texas cases, 67,903,759 total confirmed and 853,230 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com on the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. COVID-19 Pfizer Vaccine Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a COVID-19 Pfizer Vaccine Clinic from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. today. First and second doses for ages 12 and older and booster for ages 16 and older are available. Walk-in only, first come, first serve. For more information, call 432-498-4141. Quick hits, town halls. Ector County Judge candidate Dustin Fawcett has scheduled a 6 p.m. at the following dates and locations. Today, Odessa College Zant Community Room, Joe Zant Room, 2nd floor, room 222-201 West University Boulevard, January 27th, MCM Grande Fundome, 6201 Business I-20, February 1st, Kellis Turner Community Center, 2230 Sycamore Drive, February 3rd, Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane, Gardendale. February 9th, South Ector Community Center, 4455 West Apple Street. For more information, email Dustin at DustinFawcett.com or visit tinyurl.com/BDEHYRRF. Osado Plate Fundraiser. The Hispanic Heritage of Odessa has scheduled an Osado Plate Fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Friday. Plates are $13 per plate and will include asado, rice, beans, and potato salad. Free delivery for two or more orders. Proceeds will help fund HHO reading programs, senior reader programs, Hispanic Excellence Awards, and Celebrando la Cultura. To order, call Carol Uranga at 432-349-9840, Liliana Marquez at 432-894-8128, or Erica Ballinger at 432-528-7253. Concerts, the Hacienda Event Center, 12160 Texas 191 Frontage Road, Midland, has scheduled the following events. Friday, Gerardo Ortiz, La Adictiva, La Fiera de Okanaga y Impacto, Sinalonces. February 11th, Jay Wheeler. February 18th, Luis R. Conríquez, Los Huracanes del Norte y Los Rieleros del Norte. Duelo de Acordeones, Ricardo Arjona Blanco y Negro Tour. For event times and tickets, visit HaciendaMidland.com. Gun and Blade Show, Silver Spur Trade Gun and Blade Show have been scheduled for 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, Building G, 4201 Andrews Highway. Adults are $7 and 12 and under are free. A $1 off NRA, TSRA, or military with ID. All law enforcement get in free with their badge. Only one discount special can be used at a time. Cash only admission. Visit SilverSpurGunShow.com. Winter Shopping Expo. American Legion, Earl S. Bailey Post 430, 2701 East 8th Street has scheduled a Winter Shopping Expo from noon to 6 p.m. Saturday. More than 35 vendors will be available. Visit tinyurl.com/2P9C7PF6. Local News Roundup. Denton man dies in fatal collision in Ector County. Texas Department of Public Safety officials said a 28-year-old Denton man died in a two-vehicle collision in Ector County. The fatal collision happened at 2:45 a.m. January 18th at Interstate 20, about 15 miles east of Monahans, a DPS press release stated. Raul Villanueva, 36, of Monahans, was driving a 2016 Chevrolet Silverado, while Arnaldo Esquivel de la Rosa, 28, of Denton, was driving a 2008 Dodge Nitro SUV. DPS detailed that the Silverado was traveling east in the westbound lane of I-20, while the Nitro was traveling west in the westbound lane of I-20. The Silverado was driving the wrong way in the westbound lanes of Interstate 20 and collided with the Nitro. Villanueva was transported to Medical Center Hospital and listed in serious condition, the press release stated. Esquivel de la Rosa was pronounced dead by the Ector County Medical Examiner. Man charged with abandoning stepson after evading troopers. A Texas Department of Public Safety probable cause affidavit detailed a 33-year-old man was arrested after he attempted to use a fraudulent passport card, abandoned his 11-year-old stepson while evading law enforcement, and pushed a nurse after receiving medical treatment. El Pedillo Alejandro Rodriguez Venegas was charged with evading arrest or detention with a vehicle, a third-degree felony, abandoning or endangering a child, a third-degree felony, escape while arrested, a third-degree felony, assaulting EMS personnel, a third-degree felony, fraudulent use or possession of identifying information, a state jail felony. Venegas was also charged with evading arrest or detention, a Class A misdemeanor, reckless driving, a Class V misdemeanor, and accident involving damage to vehicle, a Class B misdemeanor. He also has three counts of failure to appear for two aggravated assault charges, a second-degree felony and assault, a Class A misdemeanor. The incident happened January 17th when troopers were traveling west on Farm to Market Road 2020 when a Chevrolet pickup was traveling east with a defective headlamp, the affidavit stated. Troopers say they turned around and saw the pickup had an expired license plate, December 2021, as well as no license plate light. The troopers asked the driver, Venegas, to step out and walk to the rear of the vehicle. The affidavit stated, troopers also saw a front right passenger to be a 12-year-old boy. Venegas handed troopers a U.S. passport which identified him as 24-year-old Julio Purciada. Troopers say the picture on the passport looked nothing like him. Troopers asked Venegas how old he was, and he stated he was 27. That didn't match the birth on the card. Troopers told Venegas that he was going to be detained. When they tried to get his hands under control to place him in handcuffs, he slipped away and got back into the driver's seat of his vehicle and began evading. the vehicle wrecked into a concrete fence on the south side property of JM Transmissions, located at 2675 Kermit Highway. The driver fled the scene, leaving the 12-year-old boy alone, the affidavit stated. The 12-year-old boy identified the driver as his stepfather. Troopers say the Odessa Police Department officers were able to subdue Venegas a short distance away from the collision site. Venegas requested hospital treatment, so he was transported to Medical Center Hospital to be medically cleared, the affidavit stated. While the nurse, identified as Cindy Wall, was about to have Venegas discharged and released, Venegas stood up from his medical bed and shoved Wall out of the way to escape. Troopers used their taser to bring Venegas to the ground, where he was brought back into custody. Troopers transported Venegas to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center, where he was booked in and released to jail staff without incident. Venegas was booked into jail on January 18th, records show. He has 9 bonds totaling $35,000, and he was still in custody as of Wednesday morning. Venegas's 2 failure to appear counts for the 2 aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charges are being held without bond. Man charged with choking girlfriend. A 23-year-old man was arrested after deputies say he choked his girlfriend. Joseph Jernigan was charged with assault to a family or household member by impeding breathing or circulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. The assault happened January 18th when the complainant, identified as 18-year-old Ileana Galindo, filed a report that she was assaulted by her boyfriend, Jernigan. The Ector County Sheriff's Office probable cause affidavit detailed. Galindo stated she and Jernigan have lived together for 2 months. Galindo told deputies the assault happened around 1:15 a.m. January 18th at their home located in the 9300 block of West 25th Street. Galindo stated that Jernigan assaulted her, caused bodily injury, and restricted her airway by strangling her, which nearly left her unconscious. The assault was done without consent, and Galindo wanted to file charges against Jernigan, the affidavit stated. Jernigan was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on January 18th, jail records show. He has 1 bond totaling $7,500 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. COVID-19 variant nomenclature. Dear Dr. Roach, please tell us the scheme for naming the COVID variants. Why did we skip from the 4th Greek letter, Delta, to the 15th, Omicron, LC? Answer. The World Health Agency carefully monitors the strains of coronavirus that are found throughout the world. In addition to the initial virus, variants have been monitored, that's an official category, by the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, including Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Epsilon, Zeta, Eta, Iota, Kappa, Lambda, and Mu. While the variants of concern are Delta and now Omicron, the variant Theta is no longer considered a variant of interest. Nu sounds too much like N-E-W and was thought to be confusing. While Kazai is a common last name, and so both these letters are skipped. Hence, Omicron, the most dangerous coronavirus variant, would be called variants of high consequences due to ineffectiveness of vaccines, diagnostic tests, or approved treatments. Fortunately, there aren't any of those yet identified. The more active coronavirus cases there are in the world, the greater the likelihood of more concerning variants being transmitted. That's why a worldwide commitment to vaccines and other measures to reduce transmission are so important. And you can read more about coronavirus variants at tinyurl.com/CDC COVID variants.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 20th. When going gets tough, husband locks his door. Dear Abby, when my husband and I fight, which isn't really that often, he shuts himself away for several days. He locks the door to his office or the guest room and won't come out. I try to give him time to cool off, but sometimes it's awkward. He wouldn't talk to me at all for several days while his whole family was here celebrating his grandma's 90th birthday. He's mad again. I apologized by text since he wouldn't talk to me, but our kids, ages 6 and 8, are going to wonder why Daddy isn't with us. Should I skip a planned event and give him more time to cool off, or try to approach him? Signed, Waiting for Him in Georgia. Dear Waiting, skip the planned event, and when your passive-aggressive husband comes out of hiding, insist the two of you get marriage counseling to resolve your differences. What he has been doing isn't healthy for your marriage. Dealing with conflict by hiding and using the silent treatment to punish one spouse sets a poor example for your children, who are old enough to recognize that something is wrong between Daddy and Mommy. If he won't do it for the sake of your marriage, he should do it for the emotional health of those kids. Dear Abby, I will be meeting an old high school friend for lunch. We are now in our 50s. I heard through the grapevine that she never had children. I am unsure what to say when the subject of children comes up, as it invariably will. I'm sorry may not be appropriate because perhaps she never wanted any. Wow or interesting may sound a bit odd. In a similar vein, what does one say to someone when they share that they are divorced? I recall a woman I met telling me she was divorced. I said, "I'm sorry," and she replied, "I'm not." What's an appropriate response for when these situations happen? I don't want to appear unsympathetic, but perhaps they don't want sympathy. Signed, Sympathetic in Florida. Dear Sympathetic, you may have hit on something. The birth rate in the United States is at an all-time low because many women have chosen to forego motherhood. If someone tells you she doesn't have children, all you have to say is, "Oh," and change the subject. You should not interrogate the person further. As for the subject of divorce, sometimes dissolution of a marriage is therapeutic. Do not ask for or expect more details. Show an interest in what your old friend is doing now and move on from there. Dear Abby, my late husband was a dentist. Should I include his DDS degree on his headstone? Signed, Not Sure in the South. Dear Not Sure, although your husband may be deceased and no longer practicing dentistry, it doesn't make him any less a dentist. He earned his degree. If you would like it carved in granite, I don't see why it shouldn't be. Inquire at the cemetery about the protocol.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.